It's a real pleasure to be here, and I'm very grateful to Dr. Jameson for inviting me, and also to Ida Deshaiti for her help, and Cheryl Rogers as well, looking after me so very nicely. I'm going to talk a little bit about an effective alternative, or a potentially effective alternative, and I guess it all starts here, and this is Rudolf Virchow in his office in the middle of a filing system that I think many of us are still quite familiar with. It goes back to his observation about infiltrates into tumors, which I think predates the Steve Rosenberg observations almost 100 years later. But in between Don Thomas, who was a mentor of mine and who died recently in November of last year, who performed the first bone marrow transplants and really demonstrated the graft versus leukemia effect of bone marrow transplantation rather than simply the intensive therapy aspect of it. But then in 2002, Andrea Velarde indicated that there was some evidence that NK cell alloreactivity improves acute myeloid leukemia survival in patients who undergo haploidentical transplants. And then, of course, we're all familiar with the CAR story, which started in 2006 and most recently Carl June's very exciting work, which I think continues to energize the field. So what about NK cell clinical trials? Well, if you look up clintrials.gov, you find that there are over 200 clinical trials with NK cells. Over 1,800 patients have been registered in those studies. There are only 7 of these trials that have actually been completed, and the total number of patients that have participated in those studies is just over 100. What's interesting is that there's no consensus on the selection or expansion methodology of these primary NK cells, suggesting that we haven't come up with an optimum method. And interestingly, the vast majority of them have been in the blood cancers, and only about 10%. That's somewhat surprising to me, but only about 10% in solid tumors. There are, however, 28 trials using allogeneic bone marrow transplantation. Well, how does it work? So this is a simplistic cartoon, and the issue here, for those who aren't really familiar with this area, the issue here is to focus on this. NK cells have inhibitory receptors and stimulatory receptors. And if you have an interaction in which the inhibitory receptor is engaged by self-MHC, the self-MHC complex, HLA class 1, then what will happen is that there will be dormancy, or at least tolerance. In contrast, if this self-MHC is missing, as may be the case in tumors, there is no inhibitory signal, and the stimulatory signals then will give rise to lysis of the particular target cell. So there are three scenarios that I'd like to offer you. The one I just mentioned, which is tolerance and the situation when an NK cell encounters a healthy cell, you will get engagement of the inhibitory receptors as well as engagement of the activating receptors, but the inhibitory receptors presumably win in this situation. In the missing self notion, the MHC class 1 antigens are absent, and so you have unopposed activating receptors taking place, and as a consequence, the activated NK cell kills the tumor target. And then you have a stress-induced situation where you have engagement of both activating and inhibitory, but the activating win because of the upregulation of these cognate ligands for the activating receptors on the target cell, and once again that cell is lysed. So the issue here is that there is this orchestrated balance between activating and inhibitory signals. And that's because of the inhibitory receptors, the co-stimulatory receptors, and the activating receptors, and with this particular target cell, the cognate ligands. The mechanism by which this works appears to be threefold. First, there's perforin granzyme release, and I'll talk about that in a minute. There's ligand-mediated killing, which is Fas-Fas ligand. The death receptor is involved. And then, as we heard a little bit earlier this morning, ADCC through the Fc receptor. Now, there have been, I think it's recognized, there have been a number of limitations associated with the use of primary NK cells. So these are natural killer cells that have been obtained either from donors or from the patient themselves. And one of the difficulties is that the most effective subsets may actually be difficult to isolate. So you may get a situation where you have NK cells that have been isolated that have low migratory capacity, low cytotoxic function, and low cytokine release, and consequently less effective outcomes. The other issue is that autologous NK cells may in fact be functionally impaired. Donor normal NK cells may in fact exhibit variability in terms of their ability to undergo culture and cytotoxicity. And there's the complexity of the cell manufacturing process with the additional complexity. If you want to engineer these cells, you have to do this in a batch operation. And furthermore, the strategies that are necessary to improve the outcome, which is to demonstrate in vivo expansion of this cell population, may involve toxicity. So lymphodepletion may be necessary to enable those NK cells, those adoptively introduced NK cells, to expand in vivo, and that may require immunosuppressive agents that can cause toxicity. So the alternative approach, which I found rather an attractive one, is to consider the use of natural killer cancer cells to fight cancer. In other words, we would propose using malignant, immortalized NK cells derived from patients with NK cell malignancies. Now, there are about four NK cell lines in captivity. I'm only going to be talking about these two, but the list is growing. There are a number of reports now, and I believe that we have a line that has finally taken off that may be of value as well. So let me talk about two lines. I think the most interesting and important line is NK92. This is a permanent NK cell line which was derived by a colleague of mine, Hans Klingemann, in Vancouver in 1992 from a patient, a 50-year-old man with a natural killer non-Hodgkin lymphoma with a large granular lymphocyte morphology and the immunophenotype that you see here. CD56 suggesting NK cells, but the Fc receptor, as you can see there, is missing. Demonstration of cytotoxic activity against a variety of targets, and as I'll indicate in a minute, this cell population has been used in phase one clinical trials. Doubling time is rapid. It has multiple chromosomal abnormalities, as befits a malignant line. And what's important, and the reason I raise this, is that obviously if we're even remotely considering administering this to patients, we need to make sure that the patients aren't going to get the malignancy from which the cells were derived. So the way to do that then is to treat those cells with irradiation, radiate the cells, to prevent them from dividing. These NK92 is important because it doesn't express those inhibitory receptors, the killer immunoglobulin-like receptors that may send inhibitory signals to prevent lysis of the target cell. But it does possess, as well, activating receptors. So it has the advantage of not having inhibitory receptors, and the advantage of having these activating receptors. It doesn't, however, express the FC receptor, which means that it can't engage an ADCC. But it does express a co-stimulatory molecule, CD28. KHYG1 is another line that does have some activity. This was generated from a 45-year-old woman with an aggressive NK leukemia, and the immunophenotype is very similar to NK92, but it has a P53 mutation, which is kind of interesting, and it's the same mutation as was found in the primary cells of that patient. There haven't been any clinical trials conducted with that cell. It does demonstrate cytotoxicity against a variety of targets. I'm not going to have time to tell you about that. And one of my postdocs a number of years ago, in fact, was able to dissect out some of the mechanisms associated with the killing. And what was really quite interesting is that the perforin was an inactivated cleave form, ready to roll. Granzyme M, rather than granzyme A, was the granzyme that was responsible for that killing. And fascinatingly, it had constitutively polarized granules. So this is as though the cell was poised to kill. And the mechanism here is through NKG2D with constitutive upregulation of ERK and then granule polarization and then subsequent release once the target and effector cell come together. So this is a very good example. This is KHYG1, which has the polarized granules constitutively. There, you can see them. In contrast to NK92, which has them spread, as in the normal situation, evenly across here. But once NK92 comes into contact with a leukemia cell, look what happens. You get granule polarization. And I think, I'm not sure whether this is the first or not. I haven't published this yet. But what we ended up doing is getting quantum dots, and so the colors tend to change depending on the type of quantum dot that we have available at the time. But what we were able to demonstrate here is the release of these granules directly into this cell. We could do it by confocal microscopy and demonstrated that this wasn't just overlap. And then the next step is that the K562, which is a leukemia cell line, gets lysed. And many years ago, Hans Klingemann was able to show that, in fact, NK92, with respect to K562, was more effective than primary NK cells and more effective than LAC cells. And in addition, it could kill a variety of leukemia targets. And in a NOD SCID model, so this is an immune-deficient mouse model, the leukemic cells, human leukemic cells, could be overcome and survival could be demonstrated in those mice that had received the leukemia cells that had been pre-treated with the NK92. If you irradiate the NK92, at least over a relatively short range in this particular study, you can show that it retains its cytotoxicity, which is really important because it's all very well to say, well, you know, we don't want them to divide, but if they lose their cytotoxicity, then it's not much use. And in contrast, it looks like it's essentially unimpaired, or at least minimally impaired. The clonogenic capacity of those NK92 cells is completely abrogated at around 500 rads. And the same is true. This was a postdoc in my lab who demonstrated this with KHYG1. And in fact, over a very wide range, as you can see, 5,000 rads, it really doesn't lose very much cytotoxic ability. So the advantages of these cells is that you can expand them outside the body. And what you end up with is a standardized agent rather than a standardized protocol, which is what you're obliged to do if you take primary cells. NK92 and KHYG1 to some extent are more cytotoxic than normal NK cells. And as I said, irradiation prevents the cells from dividing, but their cytotoxicity is retained. And the other really nice thing is that you have this homogeneous population where the cytotoxicity is reproducible, whereas it's a little unpredictable if you're dealing with primary cells. And we now have some evidence that these cells can be modified reasonably easily to improve targeting. So let me tell you about two phase one clinical trials. This is from Hans Klingemann's group, and this was a phase one dose escalation study. And it was basically in renal cell carcinoma, which is where and melanoma, which is where I would have thought a lot of NK studies would have been done. But Hans certainly chose this population very appropriately, I think, and found that it was safe and non-toxic, although there was one case of severe hypoglycemia for reasons that not entirely clear, but well tolerated. Now, we're in the process of conducting a phase one trial in Toronto at the Princess Margaret Hospital. Our aim is to obtain at least 12, hopefully 15 patients. But as I'll indicate to you, this is an expensive endeavor, and it's a dose escalation study. And I can't give you the details because I don't want to compromise our opportunity to publish this. This is unpublished information. But what I can tell you is that we irradiate the cells with 1,000 rads. The protocol, because the cells are irradiated and we think that they die within about 3 days, we administer them day 1, 3, 5 on a monthly basis for 6 months, so up to 18 infusions, 6 cycles. And there is no immunosuppression or recent cytotoxic agents involved in this trial there. And we don't administer interleukin-2 because I didn't want there to be any confusion about the toxicity of NK92 versus the toxicity of IL-2. 9 patients have been entered to date, well tolerated, and there are responses. And I hope that I'll be able to tell you about this once the paper is in press. So what are the limitations of this? I mean, there are certainly some limitations. One is that you actually have to irradiate these cells, and as a consequence, they do undergo apoptosis. Now, that's not a huge issue because the cells are still very easy to manipulate, and the radiation procedure is relatively straightforward. But by definition, you can't expand these cells in vivo. So the alternative that you have is to give them more often. And the manufacturing costs are moderately high. In fact, in our particular study, because of the extensive nature of the number of infusions, it's very high. And there is some uncertainty also about whether or not the NK cell lines can target tumors. So one of the things that we're doing to overcome these limitations is to redefine the protocols. I think we're going to be examining fewer infusions. I don't believe that we really need to do as many as I've indicated. Secondly, there is a way around this, and that is to engineer the NK92 cells to express a cell control fate gene, which is a polite way of saying suicide gene, to obviate the need for irradiating those cells. And in collaboration with Jeff Medine, who's a colleague of mine in Toronto, we're in the process of doing this using a lenti vector that contains a mutant thymidylate kinase gene, and in the presence of a non-toxic prodrug, so you add the non-toxic prodrug, it then becomes metabolized and gives rise to a toxic metabolite that then interferes with DNA replication. And in fact, there's evidence that the AZT-treated cells that contain the gene undergo DNA chain termination, and there are mitochondrial effects that result in apoptosis of those cells. So that's ongoing and probably a reasonable alternative to the irradiation. Now, what about improving the cell manufacture? Well, you know, we've analyzed the data, and in fact, not surprisingly, culturing is a substantial cost, and bags, plastic bags, are also a really significant cost. So one way of overcoming this is to really look at this afresh. And what we've been doing is using a stirred tank reactor system. This is in conjunction with the Center for Commercialization of Regenerative Medicine in Toronto, and I think we're making good progress here. This will eliminate the bags, which is a major cost, at least $5,000 a patient to provide the bags. We are also introducing a perfusion system that will reduce the volume of media, huge volumes of media that we need, 50% reduction, improve the harvesting procedures to reduce cell loss, and then optimize all this so that, in my opinion, with this concerted effort, we can reduce the costs by 75%. And finally, what about the ability of NK92 and other NK cell lines to target clonogenic cancer cells? Now, I can't do with these sorts of experiments the really sophisticated studies that Katrina does with her. So my approach is rather simple-minded, and it goes back to my time with Don Metcalf, who taught me how to do colony assays in Melbourne. And so I decided to go back to that strategy, and we decided to look at multiple myeloma and also AML, acute myeloid leukemia. So this was work done, and I'm not going to describe it in any detail. It's published, and it was done by Brenna Swift, who's a graduate student in my lab and is now a medical student and doing very well. And what she demonstrated was that there was, in fact, preferential killing. This was surprising to us. Preferential killing of clonogenic myeloma cells compared with the bulk tumor cells. And it was significant. It was a threefold greater killing of these clonogenic cells. And the mechanism that Brenner was able to nail down involved these activating factors and co-stimulatory factor DNAM-1. And this raises the issue of, because if you can preferentially target clonogenic cells, raises the issue of treating minimal residual disease in multiple myeloma. And that is now the subject of ongoing discussions. Now, what about AML? Well, another grad student who's a pediatric hematologist, actually, doing a PhD in my lab, has been studying this for several years. And what he was able to demonstrate and shown here is that if you take primary acute leukemia blasts and treat them with NK92, you get significant activity, and it's dependent on the ratio of the target to effector cells. But as in the case of the myeloma, what was intriguing was that, in fact, the clonogenic cell kill was greater. And this has been confirmed in secondary plating studies as well. But that suggests, once again, that NK92 seems to have a predilection for the cancer-causing or cancer-propagating, not causing, but cancer-propagating cells here. And he was able to confirm that in a relatively straightforward experiment using cell sorting, in which he looked at the CD34-positive, CD38-positive population, the blasts, versus the putative leukemia stem cells. That's probably not sophisticated enough for Katrina, but, you know, we're getting there. CD34-positive, CD38-negative. And you can see that, in fact, there's a significant increase in kill of the stem cell-enriched population. So one of the other problems with NK cell lines is that you can't do ADCC with them. In other words, you don't have the benefit of the additional benefit of using a monoclonal antibody that might actually increase the kill. However, Winfred Wells has done some work, and this is licensed by Conquest, which is a San Diego company, and I see the president in the audience. And this group was able to do was to take NK92 and transduce it to express CD16, so that the idea then would be that the FC receptor would be present and we could do ADCC. And the answer is yes, look, it's there. And Brent, my PhD student, decided to choose Ontario Cancer Institute AML5 line, which has intermediate expression of CD123. Now we're getting a little closer to the stem cell. And this is a human AML line. It is killed by NK92. It cycles rapidly, and it does grow well in immune-deficient mice, all conditions that are important to try and prove the point. So what Brent did was took the modified CD16 expressing NK92 and did experiments together with a murine anti-CD123 antibody to see how he did with respect to killing the leukemia cells. And the result is that compared with no antibody, the kill is in fact significantly better, indicating that this modified cell line kills better than the unmodified cell line in the presence of an antibody that recognizes a subpopulation of those CD34-positive, CD38-negative cells that express CD123. And he was able to confirm that in a study in which he used Nodskid gamma null mice, that are probably the best mice to accept human leukemia cells, and could show improved survival in the mice that had been treated with the CD16 NK92 plus the antibody. And in our final series of studies, what we're trying to do is to grow an NK or develop an NK CAR, in which we would target the CD34-positive, 38-negative, 123 leukemia stem cell. So in my final few slides, what I'd like to do is to just suggest some potential scenarios that involve minimal disease, where it's likely that these agents might actually be useful. And this is a study that we published. This is a study from the Center for International Blood and Marrow Transplant Research comparing autologous versus allogeneic transplantation. So this is a donor transplant versus the patient's own cells. And you can see that when one looks at leukemia-free survival, the results are significantly better with, that the results aren't significantly better with allo transplant. I mean, they look better here, but it's not statistically significantly different, even though the numbers of patients that we've got are really quite reasonable. And that's because, for the first time, we really looked at peripheral blood autotransplants, not at marrow autotransplants, where the treatment-related mortality is much less. And the overall survival is similarly not different, but it does seem to favor the allogeneic arm. So the question is here, if one were to administer the NK cells after an autotransplant, would the results be better? And the reason, of course, that the autos do very much worse is because their relapse rate is higher. They don't have graft versus leukemia, and that's the difference. So if we can bring that down with NK cells, we'd be in a very much better situation. And finally, let me give you another example. This is CLL, close to Tom Kipp's heart. This is an interesting study from Europe. It's a randomized controlled trial comparing let's leave these patients alone versus let's do an auto transplant. And I think that must have been a very challenging study. It's doing nothing versus doing a lot. And what it shows is everything in favor of doing the auto transplant, except that in terms of the 5-year probability, you see that there's no difference. But if you look at the curves, they're really striking. So this is the auto transplant arm with respect to relapse, much less relapse than with observation. However, when you look at overall survival, it's the same. So the issue here is if we can bring this up even higher with NK cells, maybe we can really make an impact and cure some of these patients with CLL after transplantation. So my conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, is that I think that NK cell lines, certainly NK92, is a potent cytotoxic agent with a good safety profile so far, minimum side effects. It can be engineered for greater efficacy, and I'm hoping that that we'll have more data for you in the next year or so. And it can be engineered for specific cancer targets, like the CD123 CAR approach. And the greatest benefit, as I hope I've indicated to you, is that it might work extremely well in situations of minimal disease. Thank you very much.